Mitzvah, Taf Beis, 402, Mitzvah's Korban Musaf Shel Shabbos. We just finished discussing the daily offering. So in addition to the daily offerings, we know the Chinuch has discussed before and back in Parshas Emor that on special days you have additional offerings besides for the basic two daily offerings. Shenitztavu Yisrael Akrav Shnei Kivasim Korban B'chol Yom Shabbos Musaf al korban atomid shel kol yom. That in addition to the regular daily offering, which is done on Shabbos as well, so on Shabbos you offer a korban of two lambs. Again, this was something that was done very frequently, so it's a smaller korban. So all the other holidays, they have big fancy korbanos with tons of animals, but the Shabbos korban is simply two lambs. So it's interesting because we find the concept of two many times regarding Shabbos. So they always have two things. Zachar and Shamor, Shnei Kivasim, which is the source also for the Minag. Also, Lechem Mishnah we have on Shabbos. So Shabbos says two. It signifies a double blessing or double concepts. So that's why also, yeah?
Isn't there some idea that, you know, it's unlucky to have even numbers of things?
Yeah, the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim, when it talks about the Arba Kosos, so it says you shouldn't do things in dual, in even numbers, because it's like bad luck. Yeah, okay, so it's a question how seriously, yeah, okay.
13 is fine, I guess, though, right?
Right, 13 is fine, for sure. But that's why it's just... So it says, that's going to the Arba Kosos. How could there be four cups? Because it's an even number. We know that, in fact, other things were not explicitly mentioned in Chazal, that one thing is Shabbos candles. That Shabbos candles, since everything on Shabbos is doubled, and there are two, that's how the Minhag got started, that you light two Shabbos candles. So because everything is doubled, so the candles are doubled as well. Of course, we know that pi halacha, really one candle suffices for Shabbos. And nevertheless, the minhag is two
or
more. Yeah, so at least two. So the question is, some people have the practice that even if you light more than two candles, people have different minhag about how many candles to light. So you have two being distinguishable, because these are the main ones, mm-hmm. and there are only two of them. The simplest thing is you could add more. It means at least two. It's a little bit of a discussion, but you have certain types of candle setups where you have, again, you might have a candelabrum with many candles, but you have an additional two candles, or some people light two candles with olive oil and the rest of the candles regular wax candles in order to distinguish the two main ones that are the double ones in honor of Shabbos. And in different Rishonim actually formulated different ways. It's the way the Shulchan Aruch, I think, brings it, is that it doesn't say you light two candles. It says you use one candle but two wicks.
Oh.
But since that's...
A Havdalah candle? I mean,
it would be like... think about it like, a lamp, like a genie type of lamp.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lamp with a big reservoir of fuel, and you just stick two wicks in the end. So it's not going to be like...
Two wicks would be one flame, though. You know?
I don't know exactly how you do it, but you could have them slightly apart from each other, again, depending on how big the opening of the candle is. But maybe it would be all together, and just the idea of the two wicks. But again, the other Rishonim say two candles, and of course that's the minhag nowadays, two candles. Shoresh Mishoresh Mitzvah Hamusafin Shel Yamim Tovim Karkasav Divseder and Morel HaKohanim, that we have a Korban Musaf because it behooves us to contemplate the message of the holiday by doing an action. And the action is by offering extra karbanos, which helps us take more seriously the extra holiness of the day. So the Musaf of Shabbos is in the same bunch as the rest of the extra korbanos, the korban musaf. And it's the same idea. Again, another way of internalizing that God created the earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh. There were other details over there. Mitzvah Tuf Gimel, 403. Mitzvah Kor Musa B'chol Rosh Chodesh. So when a Rosh Chodesh is not a super holy day, it's a somewhat holy day. But I also as a korban musav, even though there's no iser malacha per se, is the point on Rosh Chodesh. Nevertheless, there's a korban musav. Yeah.
Some women, I understand that some women have a custom not to do housework and stuff on Rosh Chodesh.
Right. So the Mishnah says that you have, in general, when you have a Torah reading on a weekday, so you have three aliyos. But on Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, you have four. So why is Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed the same? Like on regular days, you have fewer aliyos because people need to get to work earlier. So it's you have to spend less time.
In what universe?
On the laning. So the question is, what do you mean? How could it be that there is less work? Because Chol HaMoed, we understand that there's a recorded prohibition of doing malacha unless there's a pressing need for it. Again, I'm going on to all the details of the halachos of Chol HaMoed right now, but in general, one should avoid doing work on Chol HaMoed, so that we understand. But Rosh Chodesh, whoever heard of a formal prohibition on malacha on Rosh Chodesh? So some explain that it means for the women. Women are coming to shul and they're hearing the laning. Maybe in the times of the Mishnah, it's talking about a time where women can still get aliyos. So,
okay.
In the times of the Mishnah, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I heard that.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing, that was Kvodos Tzibor, that women were getting aliyos, so the men would be embarrassed that people would think that there were no men available who knew how to read.
It's all about them.
So therefore, women no longer get aliyos, yeah.
Well, no, my question was about the women with the custom of not...
Right,
not
so that's why. Work. So some people say, explain that this Isser Malacha that's talking about that people don't need to get to work on Rosh Chodesh is talking about women, and that women should not do involved labor on Rosh Chodesh. They say it was given to them because Rosh Chodesh has a special yontiv just for women, because they did not participate in actively in the Egel Azov,
right.
The golden calf. Because it says that on one hand, what Aaron said, take off your jewelry and give it to me to make the golden calf, but then it says that it doesn't say that the women actively gave it. It says what? That the men took it off them because they weren't willing to give it. rip off the earrings. Okay, so that's why they were given an extra holiday where they got to relax.
The thing that interested me about this when I first heard about it was, okay, they don't do laundry, they don't do sewing. Mm-hmm. Anybody does that anymore? Sewing. But for me, if I was going to take this seriously, which I don't even remember anymore, but say. There's certain kinds of needlework that I do for fun, as you well know.
Right,
so,
right.
So I said, well, what do you mean I can't do this on Rosh Chodesh? I enjoy doing this. It's a treat.
Yeah, so
I have the time to do this instead of doing laundry.
So there are many different opinions about, A, how binding this custom is.
Uh-huh.
Some say really it's just optional if women want to take it as an opportunity to say to their husbands, you know, if they say, no, where's my fresh ironed shirt? Oh, honey, I'm not allowed to do that today. It's Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so if you want to take off, you can, but it's not required.
Okay.
And even those who say that there is really, they should observe this minhag. So first of all, there are exceptions. Obviously, if a woman needs to go to work to support her family, all these things, so then sure, or cooking also is not included in this. But obviously that she can. But there are some who say that even if there's some involved labor, like sewing, which was traditionally not done by women on Rosh Chodesh, so if it's something, if you're not doing it for labor purposes, but for enjoyment, then you're allowed.
Okay, I feel better.
Yeah. So that's the story of Rosh Chodesh. Nagrav korban musaf b'chol Rosh Chodesh al tamid shel kol yom shenamar v'sheichad sheichayim takrivu olah l'Hashem parim v'nei makar shnayim v'elech chagim v'asim v'nei shal shivat mimim v'min chazav v'nei skem, and you have an accompanying meal offering and wine libation u'sirizim echad l'chatos and achatos, etc., etc. Mishor Shea Mitzvah, it says explicitly in the Chumash. Hakdama, here's an introduction. Yadua lechol chacham le bivnei adam ki galgal Hashemesh v'galgi arech polim b'chulcham ha'netzal alea me'adon kol ha'kochos ba'olam ha'shofel pulos gidolos b'gufos b'nei'ad v'chol minei shar bali chayim. That, again, it's not that they have intrinsic control, but the power of the sun and the moon and the celestial bodies has an effect over the world. In other words, part of the natural force that God imbued them with was that they have certain, not just the tides, and the moon, moon controls the tides, right? So in addition to that, they had other things.
Is this astrological? Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Gam b'chol hatzomeach ba'aretz min ha'rozim ha'gedolim ha'nosovim ha'dakim. that even, I don't know about astrological, just as we'll see from the continuation, the times of the Sefer Chinuch, they thought that there was more of an impact than there really is in terms of what we know now to be the laws of physics. We'll see. So anything that grows in the ground from the great cedars until the lowliest grass, and the four elements, right? The four elements, earth, fire, air, water. That in olden times they believed that everything was composed of that. It talks about the moon there as having an impact on the crops. Before some, the chol hamon ha'am nairim va'im zekenim, that even young people and old people, kikoach alavana nikar b'chol asher nasev aretz, there's an impact of the moon in anything that's done on the earth. Kedua lechorse ha'ilanos levinyanos, kilo yichresum bizman shalavana b'chidusha l'avor chamisha yamim o'yosar. People don't chop trees at the time of the new moon until about 5 days after, because the trees are weaker at that time and they produce less long-lasting wood. The yordi ayam gam kein in mafligim bo ad achar chamisha yamim shel chidush alavana. That same thing, people don't start boat trips until 5 days after the new moon. V'chein yizharim kol v'ne'odem yakiz dam samuch lechidusha. That people do not let blood within 5 days of the new moon because it's not as good for you. The same thing, other things you should also not do at the time of the new moon. That flax, which is soaking at the time of the new moon, will not be good clothing. Harichus Bahen Yaldus. Everybody knows all this, and it will just be silly for me to explain it to you, because you're probably already childish, because you already know it. That this is part of the natural order that God decreed for the world. So we have to make a korban in order to emphasize that the moon's power is not of its own accord, but rather it was just because it was given to it as part of the natural order by God. That all the celestial bodies only have power because God built that into the order of creation. Once, if we recognize this, then the blessing of God will be more prevalent within our workings. Okay, so we know that we don't understand what this is talking about nowadays, but nevertheless, it is important to realize that celestial bodies have to do with the way God commanded them to be, and also there are people who give other reasons for the reason that's for Rosh Chodesh, that we're so dependent on the moon, that the Jewish people is like the moon. Sometimes they're more downtrodden, sometimes they're better. But we have to remember, so like in Kiddush Levana, we say Shehem Asidim Lischadish Kemusa. When we think about the new moon, that even if the Jewish people seem to be Tisha B'Av, the message just a week ago. So we the Jewish people seem to be very, very, very downtrodden and lowly. We can rest assured with the hope that we will soon become like a full moon again. Dine Amitzvah Bina Musaf Muchal Ha'inyan Kiminhagi Kosafti Musaf Pesach V'Seder Amor LaHakvanim. Way back in Parshas Emor, we talked about the Musafim. We talked about a little bit back in the last mitzvah of Shabbos as well. The Odo Diach Kan Shirosh Chodesh Achalios B'Shabbos Shir Shal Musaf Rosh Chodesh Docha Shir Shal Musaf Shabbos. Oh, so we know that the Levim sang songs, right? That's why we have a Shir Shal Yom in the daily service. That on Monday they said, well, on Tuesday they said, da 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 da. So on every day after the Korban Tamid, they used to say a song that was appropriate to the day of the week. So they used to say an appropriate song by the Korban Musaf as well. So when you have, so he only sang one song by the Musaf. Even if there was more than one Musaf on that day, they would only sing one song. So when there was Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, so you have to offer the Korbanos of Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, but you have to choose one song. So which song would you think you'd pick?
Shabbos.
Shabbos you think you'd pick. Shabbos is holier, or Shabbos is more frequent. Of course, Mekudash and Tadir. So you would assume that you picked the song of Shabbos. However, such was not the case, that they actually used to sing the song of Rosh Chodesh. Why? Kedei lefarsim shehayom Rosh Chodesh. Because in the olden days, again, at the times of the Beis HaMikdash, it was they didn't have a calendar in advance, and people had to know what day the Beis Din sanctified as Rosh Chodesh.
Mm-hmm. But this is the very end of the whole, you know, service, as it were. So
right.
If they haven't figured out that it's Rosh Chodesh by then, I mean, it seems like, you know, but the song isn't good. It's a little bit too late, isn't it? And according
well,
to
no, the, it's not for the, in the within the Beis HaMikdash. It's just so that the people who were at the Beis HaMikdash should, it was another way of emphasizing that today was Rosh Chodesh. Yeah, that's why also that we recite the psukim of the Korban Musaf of Rosh Chodesh during Korbanos. So, hey, you know, why do we recite the psukim of Rosh Chodesh during Korbanos? Do we recite the psukim of when it's Pesach? Do you recite the psukim that describe the Musaf of Pesach within the section of Korbanos in the beginning of davening? No, the reason being that everyone knows it's Pesach. We don't need to emphasize it even more. Whereas Rosh Chodesh, some people forget, which is why they we recite the Korban Musaf right there in the beginning. But here it was a slightly different reason, but somewhat related, that we wanted to make sure that people were aware that it was Rosh Chodesh. V'yadua sheshiras musfei Shabbos b'mikdash. What was the shir shel yom of Shabbos? Oh, but that's by the Shacharis. That's by the Korban of Shacharis. What was the shir shel yom by the Korban Musaf? Ha'azinu. B'mikdash sheshiras ha'azinu. Okay, it's not in Sefer Tilim. You think that the Shir Shel Yom has to be from Sefer Tilim, but in fact not. That in fact they used to sing it from the Shira of Ha'azinu. V'mechalking osa l'shisha prakim b'shisha Shabbos. So they didn't do the whole thing every Shabbos. It's too long. They used to divide it into sixths. V'asimen hazivloch, meaning that the first part began Ha'azinu, that's the hay, and the Zion was Zechor Yemos Olam. And then Yud, Yarkiv, there are different shittas about it. There are different lines that begin with Hey, Zion, Yud, and Hey, everyone agrees. But the different lines that begin with Zion, Yud, Vav, Lamed, Chaf. And so different, slightly different opinions about where, exactly how they would divide the song. But nevertheless, they used to divide it into six based on these Hazivlach. Kederach Sh'anu Koronos Bebeis HaKnesses. And you also, we follow this rule that when we read Parshas Hazinu, usually there is a relative flexibility about where you're allowed to start and end an aliyah. Halachically, again, these are these things that you print that are printed in the Chumash, is just a convention, but you could start or end an aliyah pretty much wherever you want. There are certain restrictions, but there is flexibility. But when you lay in Parshas Hazinu, you have to start the aliyos at these sixth. You're supposed to divide them in the natural way that the song was divided in the Beis HaMikdash.
There's seven aliyos, though.
Yeah, but there's a little part of the end of Parshas Hazinu that's not part of
the
year.
Right, that's right, which is not the song itself.
Yeah, so the six aliyos are in the song itself, and the seventh aliyah is the one after. So Rav Schechter goes so far with this that he says you have to do this even on weekdays. That you have to follow the Hazivlach. That's why in the YU Beis Medrash, when you're laning Hazinu on a weekday, so you start with Hazinu, then you do the Zayin, and then the Yud. So the weekday laning is much longer than in any other shul, because most other shuls don't follow this Hazivlach. They just read three psukim, and you finish by the first aliyah. So you basically, by Rav Schechter, so you lane the first three aliyahs of Shabbos, even on a weekday. Mitzvah Tov Dalet 404, Mitzvah's Korban Musaf B'Yom Chag HaShavuos, the Musaf of the holiday of Shavuos. Shnistav Yisrael Akrav Korban Musaf B'Yom Chag HaShavuos Shehu Yom HaShishi B'Sivan, the sixth day of Sivan. Of course, it doesn't have to be the sixth of Sivan. That's assuming that Nisan is Mole and Iyar is Chaser, that Nisan has the 30 days and Iyar only has 29 days. But of course, there was variability in the times where they were sanctifying Rosh Chodesh based on observation of the moon. So usually it'll be on the 6th of Sivan, but it doesn't have to be. It could be on the 5th or it could be on the 7th as well. Shenemar v'yom habikurim bakrivchem mincha chadasha l'shem v'shavu seichem kor gazavti pa'amim ki b'seir emur alakwanim musav de pesach seiches dibarti me'inyan ha'musafim. So I explained this in Parashat Emor along with the Musafin. Mitzvah Tafhei 405. Mitzvah Shofar Barosh Hashanah. Timely mitzvah. We're going to start blowing the shofar for Elul in just a couple weeks. But the main mitzvah of shofar, the Elul is a minhag. It's not a mitzvah per se. That the mitzvah of blowing shofar is on Rosh Hashanah. So what's up with this mitzvah? Shenitzdavinu lishmoa kol shofar, that we have to hear the sound of the shofar. That the mitzvah is really that to hear the shofar and not to blow the shofar, which is just an interesting formulation. Minchas Chinuch discusses it over here. Fine. B'yom rishon shel Tishrei shu Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Tishrei, kind of. Uchadisnan maseches Rosh Hashanah becha b'Tishrei Rosh Hashanah l'shanim. You count years based on the first day of Tishrei. Shenemar Yom Teruah Yelachem. It shall be the day of blowing a shofar. Avafal pi she'ein kan zecher l'teruah zo im b'shofar im b'mitzaltayim o b'chol shar klei nigo. And the Torah never says what you blow on Rosh Hashanah. Not once. What do you blow on Rosh Hashanah? So do you blow a ram's horn, or do you clap cymbals? Or do you use a different musical instrument? So since the Torah does declare explicitly what you blow when it comes to the Yovel year, that you have to blow the shofar on the Yovel year, then it says explicitly there, uskatem shofar teruah b'chodesh hashvi'i, you have to blow the shofar. So since it says over there trua and it says over here trua, so you learn out the laws of Rosh Hashanah from the what was done on the Yovel year as well, and you also learn out from the Yovel the type of shofar, that the type of blasts that have to be sounded. Well, fine. Mishor she mitzvah. What are the reasoning behind the mitzvah? Visha adam bal chomer lo yisorer lo dvarim ki al yidei hameorer. That normally you're only going to be encouraged to think certain thoughts and have certain feelings based on something that actively wakes you up. Kederach mani adam beis hamilchama yariu af yatzrichu kedesh yisorer yafel hamilchama. That people scream when they're going charging into battle, it gets you all worked up. Or if you see professional tennis, you watch professional tennis. So when people grunt, players grunt when they hit the ball. The grunting, okay, doesn't. You could hit the ball
better for television, probably.
You can hit the ball without grunting, but the grunting helps encourage you to really get the ball. So the same thing too here. V'gam kim yom Rosh Hashanah shu yom ha'noad mikadem ladun bo kol b'nei olam, that the people, that this was the day that was set aside for the judgment of people. Uchmo sham mizuchan levracha Rosh Hashanah kol b'nei olam avrim lifnei Hashem kivnei maron, that the people go before God on Rosh Hashanah in single file, meaning you get individualized attention.
Whether you want it or not.
Yeah. Each person gets a particular watching. And if you're good, then you get written for a good year. And if you're bad, then you get an appropriate punishment. Either maybe death, if it's really that bad, or it could be something else that you'll suffer during the year. Al kein tzarich kol echad lahoir tivo levakish rachamim al chatov me'adon harachamim, that you must ask mercy from God, on Rosh Hashanah, ki al chanum v'rachum hu v'nosei avon v'atesha v'chata v'nakele shavim eila v'choliban, that if you repent, then God will erase your sin. But if you don't repent, then nothing doing. V'kol ha-shofar me'or harbe leiv kol shoma v'kol sheken kol ha-terua. That the voice, that the sound of the shofar encourages people to wake up, and it opens the wellsprings of repentance. V'chol sheken kol ha-terua kilomer kol ha-nishbar. It's certainly the broken voice sound of the shofar. So we know that there are two blasts that the types of blasts that we blow on Rosh Hashanah. One is the straight blast, and one is a trua, which is a broken blast. And as the Sefer Chinuch discussed later, that it's a shaila exactly what the trua blast is. But nevertheless, the broken blast is perhaps even more emotionally evocative than the straight blast. Umilvad has arushabo yeshlul adam zechar badavar sheyishbor yetzer libo hara betaybas olam vechatoim v'shamu kolos nishbarim. That when you hear you should get the idea of like crying. It's like hearing a sound of crying. It's like broken. We should break ourselves, meaning that we should not give in to the temptations. That we should just be broken before God. And we should break our yetzer hara. Ki kol adam kefima sheyira be'enov v'oznav yishma yavin levavo v'yavin bedvarim. That if you hear it, see with your eyes and hear with your ears, so too you're going to put it into practice. V'ayinu dama Rabbi Yehuda v'rosh Hashanah tokim b'shal zecharim. Kelomar v'keren akvasim akofuf. Kedei sheyizkor adam b'rososo sheyachuf liba l'shamayim. That on Rosh Hashanah, you're ideally supposed to blow with the a shofar of a male ram. A ram is male, but a male sheep, a male ram.
Female sheep.
So the reason being that it's a bent form. And so you get the idea not only by hearing it and the broken sound, but rather by seeing a curly type of shofar, you get the idea that you should twist yourself into submission on Rosh Hashanah before God. This is the minag of the Klal Yisrael to use a ram's horn for Rosh Hashanah. So, as the Chinuch is going to explain later, there potentially are other types of horns that are kosher. However, the preference is to use a ram's horn also because it evokes the memory of the Akedah, of the binding of Isaac, where you had a ram involved in the end over there at the binding of Isaac. However, the Rambam holds that only a ram's horn is kosher. So it's an unusual sheet. It's a lone sheet on the Rishonim. But nevertheless, that's one reason why we try to use, if at all possible, a ram's horn, because everybody reads its best, and the Rambam holds that it's absolutely required. There's also this idea of being kufuf. So what is called kufuf? That it's good, that the horn is bent. So if you look at a ram's horn, it's curly. So a lot of people interpret a kufuf, that doesn't really need to be curly, but rather just bent at some point. So that's why a lot of shofaros are straightened.
Oh, really?
They go, instead of curly, they go, they just go out, and just a little bent in it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With just a little bend in it, which is, people interpret it, that's considered kafuf, and what's not kafuf is mamish, a straight horn. So Rabbi Slifkin, I think, has an article about this where he says that this might not be what kafuf means. That if kafuf might mean that the curliness, the natural curliness of the shofar. So if that's true, then it would be better to have a shofar that's not straightened. That your shofar should be as curly as possible, not just
Yemenite ones are sort of corkscrew.
So it's funny. The Yemenites use a shofar of what's called a greater kudu, which is a type of animal, which is a little bit funny because they normally go in accordance with the Rambam, and the Rambam holds that's puzzle. I guess they didn't have a lot of rams that could give horns in Yemen. It's a little bit strange why they do that. But but really you should not use l'chatchila Yemenite horn. You should use a ram's horn. But anyway, so there might be an idea that one should try to get a non-straightened shofar. The problem is they're harder to blow. So the Balei Tkia don't like it. But again, something.
Which ones are the curly ones?
Yeah, they're harder to blow. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They sound different also. They sound sound is much deeper.
Right?
Deeper. Yeah.
Oh.
It's regular show.
Why should that be? It should be length, usually length of the tubing, as it were, you know.
Maybe.
It
curls around. Bounces around itself.
Oh, maybe, okay, like a French horn, I suppose. Right?
Yeah, it's a much deeper, richer sound, so it's interesting.
Hmm. What is more surface for it to vibrate on?
Well, it's the same amount of surface, whether it's straightened or not, you know.
Well, the ones I've seen, the long ones are the longer also.
Well, if they're long, the longer, the longer.
I mean, you can't get several curls if it's only, it's pretty tight.
All right. I say I have to get a picture for next time. I can show a picture of a non-straightened shofar. Midini haMitzvah, Mashav Zichron Alracha. What are the halachas? Shashir haShofar uKedei Shiochazenu Adam biYado veYeroe lechan uLechan. The minimum length of the shofar is that you should be able to hold it in your hand and it protrudes slightly from each side. It's about a tefach, approximately a tefach. And it goes by an average person. So if you have very large hands and they completely fit inside the shofar completely fits inside it. So then it's still kosher.
Soprano shofar, though.
What?
The soprano shofar. You know, that's more.
Yeah, I guess. There is also a shita. Interestingly, Rabbeinu Gershom holds that when it means that it should protrude from either side, it means. It should protrude from either side the same length as you're holding.
Oh.
So it has to be three tefachim long, not one tefach long. And then, again, we don't really fasten like this, but the minhag is, because most shofars are that long anyway, so the minhag is that we try to concern ourselves from the opinion of Rabbeinu Gershom Lechatchila. The only type of shofar that's pasul is a cow's horn, which is called a horn and not a shofar. Perush kol mashu shofar. So what does it mean that any shofar is good? It's a circular logic. A shofar is good as a shofar if it's a shofar. So what's the definition of a shofar versus a horn? Kilomar shehu cholul. A shofar is naturally hollow. In other words, it doesn't need to be hollowed out. Shalashon shofar chimashmal olam davar sheish bo cholul. It has to be something that's hollow, like shvoferes. Like shvoferes is a tube, so the idea is that it's supposed to be hollow in the middle.
I think naturally that there is cartilage or something like that.
Yeah, but, yeah, know, certainly.
It's not bone, though.
Yes, yeah, yes, it's not one piece. You could take it out. That in very colorful terminology, this piece of cartilage that you're referring to, which is naturally inside the shofar could slip off of, is called the male piece. And the shofar is called the female piece. So the idea is that you have the solid part that goes inside the hollow part, and that's the shofar. But you're supposed to take out in order to blow, you're supposed to take out the male piece and just be left with the female piece.
Can I ask you a question about the other end? Not the mouthpiece, but the other end.
Yeah.
If it gets cracked or whatever, I mean, how do they know where to cut it off? And I'm asking for, actually, personal reason. We have a beautiful shofar that's like this.
Mm-hmm.
The end of it got chipped. And I understand you it sounds fine, but I understand you can file it off and it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
No, as long as it's the minimum shear, then it would be okay. Yeah, you could.
It's more than the minimum.
Yeah, you could chop. Yeah, you chop it off. Yeah.
On either end, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, as long as it has the minimum length.
Oh, wait a minute. Does the ram's horn naturally have a mouthpiece, as it were? Is it, you know,
no, you drill it.
You have to drill it. Okay. Yeah right. So you have. Right. So in other words,
you can't just. It's not like you just go to the animal. You grab on the horn and you slide it off. And now we can. Right now we can. Now we can. Well, can you take off a shofar before the animal's alive?
I don't. I wouldn't recommend
what
it.
What do you mean? It's like it's a limb.
Well, is there? But it's like cartilage. So
no,
it's
made like fingernails.
Would it hurt? Mm-hmm. Is it like trimming your fingernail or like yanking out your fingernail?
Depends how deep you
if
go.
If it's like yanking out your fingernail, no.
Horns are very firmly anchored to the skull because otherwise they wouldn't be
right.
Suitable for,
exactly.
You know, like... If
no, I'm saying, right, but not at the part where it's anchored, where it's a couple, go a couple inches off and chop it off. Would
not
it just grow back?
No, because I think the stuff inside probably has blood in it, so...
Well, it doesn't affect us.
Why would you want to do that?
Okay, this, you know.
No, I'm not saying you would want to do that.
Is it Aver Minachai? You're not eating it, though.
Aver Minachai? Right, it's not. You're not eating it. Nothing. Aver Minachai is not Aser Banan. It's not really, yeah.
It's not what?
The prohibition of eating a limb that's torn from a live animal. That first of all, That's only for goyim. For Jews, I mean, you're not allowed. But stop. The for Jews, you have a concept of shechita. For goyim, you don't have a concept of shechita. So if you
but
were, in other words, shofar is only shayach for Jews. So your point is only relevant if you were dealing with a shofar that's for non-Jewish use, which doesn't make sense. But there's not a aser b'hanah anyway.
Oh, then my one.
You don't need it. Yeah, right.
And you don't eat it, so it's not
Aver Minachai.
And if you couldn't use the shofar that was Aver Minachai for Jews, so then you need to shech the ram with a kosher shechita before taking the.
Right.
And shofars are expensive enough as it is. I remember when I was a kid, a shofar was, I don't know, $20, $30, $40. Now shofars are easily $200, many of them.
I got
good
a
ones.
Nice shofar at.
Jewish ritual objects have gone up a lot.
Yaakov Ellman said it was okay, then it was okay.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
I'm thinking about it because it's actually the same material as fingernails and.
It's keratin, yeah.
So that if you could tie the animal down. Okay, wait a second. And it's like cutting the fingernails. I don't think that there's anything along.
No,
fingernails is different from.
If you cut, first of all, if you cut fingernails, even on birds, for example, but you used to have birds, we have.
Yeah,
if you cut it too close, it bleeds.
Of course.
Same thing with cats.
You cut it far away.
No, but I'm sorry, it has to be the very tip of it. It's just pure keratin, whatever it is. But as soon as you go up a little bit into it, not all the way towards the
clear,
yeah, there's blood vessels inside of it. So I suspect the same thing is true of
those. Well, I'm thinking, I've cut cat nails.
Yeah.
And if you get too close, you get the same problem. But if you cut the ends, it's absolutely like
our very ends, yeah,
it's
right.
Dead.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Right, so we'll have to figure this out. We can have a vegetarian shofar that you don't harm the animals.
I'm sure there are people.
Oh, no animals harmed. There are people who are
devout vegetarians who have raised those kind of issues about tefillin with their rabbis. I don't know.
I saw that when I was a little kid, an advertisement
vegan
for vegetarian vegan. You can't have a vegetarian tefillin is kosher.
What?
Meaning that it died by itself. You don't make it out of vegetables, but you make it out of animals that died a natural death instead of killing them.
Oh, okay.
So again, there's nothing wrong with a vegetarian shofar for waiting for the animal to die by itself. But
okay.
I don't know if that's what's actually done.
Okay, that's it. Okay.
Fine. So it has to be halal. V'chol shofar ba'olam sheish lo halal. That other animals that where you have horns that are one solid piece, like a deer, for example, is one. The horn is one solid piece. Even if you drill it out and you make some sort of instrument out of it.
What do you mean? They're all one solid piece.
No. In ram's horns and goat horns, so they have the inside piece and the outside piece.
Oh, I didn't understand what you meant.
So you use for the show for the outer
right.
Covering.
Okay.
Not the internal bony part. Lefish ein b'em davar chol el hazachros bilvad. They only have male pieces and no female pieces. Aval keren hapara afal pishu b'chlal shofar. So a cow's horn even has the male and female parts. That it was called the horn in the Chumash instead of a shofar. See, Bechor Sharo, talking about an ox, the Karnei Re'em Karnov, that its horn should be like that of a Re'em again. Re'im, it might be an aurochs. You can look. So I don't know if the Sefer Chenech was really using it. Okay, I don't want to go into the whole identifications of animals, but the Maisa, for this regard, the pasuk specifically said that a cow horn, bovine horn rather, is considered to be a keren. It is not considered an appropriate shofar. The Gemara also brings another reason of ein kategor nasis sanegor. A prosecutor does not become a defender.
Oh.
What does that mean?
So
it would be inappropriate to use a something bovine for the mitzvah shofar Rosh Hashanah because the shofar is supposed to be reminiscent of the Akedah.
Right.
But rather, instead of being reminiscent of the Akedah with a ram's horn, it'll be reminiscent of the golden calf. And that's not something that I want to be reminding God of, so to speak, on Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, you do not use a cow's horn.
Cool God, huh?
Eh, Yirta, somebody asked. Okay. Nifna lefi pei rishenu zeh shekol akranos shebaolam psulin liskoa bahen barosh hashana chutz mikarnei akvasim varechilim em gam hatyoshim vaizim. So the only horns that lemaisa fit the bill in this regard are those of the sheep family and the goat family. Lefi shalom atzinu baolam karnos chalulin chutz mielu v'shel para. That the only thing that have two parts, the male and female, are these and the cow. Ki karnei kol achayos einan chalulim. So wild animals are one solid piece, like a deer. V'nimsa she'enem b'chaloshon shofar she'tzivasnu hatora liskoa. So it's not called a shofar. Shalpar gamkin kvar utziya kosu b'chal aksherim. And the, for a bovine, the Torah specifically excluded it. V'ichniso imaklal psulim nishikoro bishmam. It's called with the same name as the other ones. The bad one, the no good ones. All you ask a question on me that there's a verse in the Bible that seems to describe goat horns as puzzle. How? It says in Daniel that Safir Keren Chazus Beinav, that a goat, in this vision that Daniel had, a goat had a Keren, a horn. So it should say shofar. So it should be that meaning that a goat is also puzzle.
Between its eyes, it's the unicorn. Then it wasn't a goat.
Yeah. Ooh, unicorn. Ooh. Okay. Yeah, unicorn is also puzzle. Sheha inyan hahu haya b'mare hanevuah. This was only a vision. V'hodia hakosu she'anira lenovi l'rov tokef atzafir kilo ayelo keren apsulin. Meaning, this was not a natural goat. It wasn't describing a natural goat horn at all. It was talking about that this goat was supernaturally super strong and super powerful. Therefore, it looked to the Navi as if it had a Karen. But really, a regular goat horn is like a goat. Kolomar achayesha chazak bibli nakvus, that it was a really strong horn, like one solid piece. Beinanian shach nizeno akosu yabsul and klal ki im behefech lechol maven. Really, so just it's not that the pasuk was describing it as being puzzled, but rather it's the opposite. It was only the supernatural vision of a goat that had a horn that was puzzled, but a regular goat is kosher. V'erachti lach b'ni ma'ad b'chan li sheperush hazen ischadesh v'mishna zo mizman korov asher yu lefanim perushua b'inyan acher. So this explanation of the Mishnah was talking about is by the Ramban. But others explained it in different ways, and we'll discuss maybe more about that next time, and all the other halachos of the shofar.